Welcome to the AquariMax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 66, recorded June 15th, 2011.
All right, we've got quite a bit today.
Quite a variety.
Yep, quite a variety of different things. Let's start with asking about the volume. We have adjusted the volume of the break in the middle, because it has been brought up to us that the volume was not very equal with the rest of the podcast. So please let us know if that is any better. We're hoping so. Just let us know if it's good, if it's better, if you didn't notice any difference.
Yes. And we made a new video for you guys, and we're going to tell you a little bit about that and where we filmed it.
Yeah. So let's start out, where did we film it?
We went to, my parents were in town, and my dad wanted to go to a particular store, a big, huge sporting goods store. I don't know if how widely spread they are, but it's called Cabela's. And it's like the IKEA of sporting goods store. It's huge inside. They have, you know, whole rooms of just taxidermy displays and stuff, in addition to the actual merchandise. And they also have a very large aquarium.
Yes, we'd never been there before, and we had heard that they had some large aquaria, so we thought it would be interesting to see those, at least. And when we arrived, in the middle of the store, on the main floor, they have a big mountain. It's a...
In the store.
In the store.
With various taxidermied elk and deer and whatnot displayed on it.
Right, and some
which I have mixed feelings about.
Yes, but there are things I don't like about that. But basically, there this maybe 30-foot mountain has a waterfall coming off of it, and the waterfall ends up in a pool or a pond at the bottom, and this pond is full of trout. They've got, I think they're mostly brown trout and rainbow trout. I'm not a trout expert. Game fish, I'm not, you know, I don't know a whole lot about. But
we're not fisher people.
But looking at them, I figured, oh, those are probably brown trout and those are probably rainbow trout. And then later on, I looked them up and my suspicions were confirmed that most of them were those, but there were some other types of trout mixed in with them. There were also albino rainbow trout. Apparently most trout that are albino are rainbow trout, from what I'm able to gather. So it was interesting to see those. And what were some of our observations that we made as we looked at the pool?
Well, the water was nice and clear, you brought up. I thought it was overcrowded.
Yes, I dare say. There were, how many fish were in there?
I hesitate to give a number. I don't know, 50 or 60. It was huge.
There was a huge bioload for that size of pool.
And they were big. They weren't like little wee baby trout. They were, you know, 2-3 feet.
Well, few of them were probably 3, but most of them, many of them were probably over 2, and some of them were about a foot and a half and so on.
So they were pretty good sized.
It was an immense bioload for the amount
something
of
something you would be happy to catch if you went fishing anyways.
Right, right.
And an edible size.
And there were a number of things we noticed. One was that I would have probably kept about half a dozen koi in that pond.
For the size of the pond.
For the size of the pond, myself. It was certainly big enough for half a dozen koi, but I wouldn't have put that many fish in there for sure. But I was wondering, because they had this big mountain there, do they have a big sump connected to it?
It did look like there were some other pipes leading in and out.
Right, and they could easily have fit a tank with 2 or 3 times the water volume of the pool inside the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certain they had, you know, filtration equipment inside the mountain that's filtering it, but I'm just wondering if they have a sump that is helping to decrease the true bioload of the pool,
mm-hmm.
even though the apparent bioload of it is intensely high, and still would be high even if 2 or 3 times the water volume of the pool were
just
inside
the
mountain.
Just for swimming space, it's
right,
a little
and
bit
swimming
crowded.
Space is
they're all
kind
of stacked on top of each other in parts.
Right, and one thing is that fish like this are usually accustomed to fairly cool water, and this was indoors, so I'm not sure what the temperature of the water
June.
Was. Yeah, it's June, although it's indoors, so it's climate-controlled mm-hmm. indoors, but I don't know what the temperature of the water was or if they had a chiller hooked up to it. I can only imagine the expense it must have been to put a it would have been to put a chiller in there.
Yeah.
But that's one issue. The dissolved oxygen goes down as the temperature goes up, so it's stressful for fish that live in cooler water to have to survive in warmer water, and I don't know if they had a chiller or not. I hope so.
And we did notice there were two points in the pool where most of the fish were kind of congregating with their heads toward that, and we weren't sure if that was cooler water coming out of there, or if that's because they naturally want to swim upstream and there was the current coming from there, or a combination of those.
It could be a combination, because we do know that fish like trout tend to like to face upstream and swim upstream, so that could be it. But it could be that there's more oxygenated water, mm-hmm. cooler water, and both of those mm-hmm. coming through there, and so on. And we also noticed a characteristic odor. It wasn't extremely
stinky,
strong, but there was a bit of a skunky odor there near the pool.
Oh, it was pretty strong. Maybe it's not as strong for you. I think you've kind of built up an immunity to Amquel.
We were just wondering.
It smells like skunk.
They were using one of the ammonia-reducing products like Amquel or Prime or something like that to help, counter the effects of the bioload to some degree. Won't work miracles, but it can help reduce, nitrate, ammonia, that sort of thing. So we didn't know. But the pool was interesting. They did have a nice waterfall, mm-hmm. like I said.
It was very pretty.
I'm sure that helped oxygenate things and some biological surface area along all those rocks that was running down and so on.
So that's on the video.
Right. You'll get a little clip of that on the video. And then the next thing, and I think more impressive in most ways, were the actual aquaria themselves.
And it was very cool. They had a kind of a curved hallway, basically, set up, and the walls of the hallway were the aquaria.
Yes, and I think they had two aquaria. One,
mm-hmm. one on
was
either
one
side.
Hallway that was a little shorter,
excuse me.
And then because it was a curved tube, mm-hmm. so to speak, and
it
so there's one
kind of like a bow front.
Yes.
A big bow front.
One convex and one concave.
Yeah.
And the hallway through the middle. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really interesting. I mean, these were huge aquaria, the like of which you generally only see in a public aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only other place I've seen any this big. And they had game fish in them, of course. They had more trout of various species. They had some sunfish-like fish, maybe some black crappie, I think. There was one fish.
Who just came up with that name, black crappie? That's a terrible name.
It is a terrible
Somebody name. Who doesn't like fish named that fish.
Perhaps so.
It's
or maybe
just mean.
I don't know what the etymology of that term is, but
maybe it doesn't taste very
it's
good.
It's rather unfortunate.
So they pull it out and they just,
And, well, it could be, I don't know. And then there were some sunfish, I think. Maybe some even pumpkin seed sunfish. Some looked kind of like very pretty big pumpkin seed sunfish. There were big catfish, really.
Fat catfish.
Yes, these catfish had too much to eat habitually for a long period of time. They were very chubby. Catfish, of course, tend to be rather gluttonous anyway, if they're allowed the chance. And they were around
huge.
3 feet long
yeah.
or so. I mean, catfish can get even bigger
than
that.
They
looked they were
so
big.
Heavy. They just, I mean, you could feel when you're looking at them, like if you were trying to pick them up, it would just really be painful.
Yeah, they were ponderous.
Ponderous.
Really
yeah,
ponderous.
Really ponderous.
And my favorite, I think, of the entire tank, or of both of the tanks, were the what I believe to be tiger muskellunges, which are a hybrid of the northern pike and the muskellunge, which are a closely related fish. They're from the same genus. But they're large predatory fish.
Mm-hmm.
And a tiger muskellunge is interesting in various ways, but not the least of which, it's used in management of fisheries because it is a hybrid. And it's predatory, like
and
I said.
And it's sterile.
And it's sterile, being a hybrid,
That's
as many, many hybrids are.
One of the
are.
Key things.
Right. So you can drop, let's say, in a given lake, and you can drop 400 young tiger muskies, and you can be confident that the number will stay fairly stable. Probably have
because
a few losses.
They can't breed.
They can't breed. And so you know about how many tiger muskies are going to grow up in the lake, and you know that they're going to take care of a certain amount of other fish, and that will help you to manage the numbers, because they found that the benefit of including these in lakes and so on is that the fish that fishermen are going for example, sunfish or trout or whatever, that the muskellunges will reduce their numbers such that you won't have to worry about them being stunted, breeding so much that the individual adults end up small.
They're too small.
Right. The tiger muskies will reduce the numbers, providing more space and so on for the other
fish.
Keep
the population healthy, so like a predator should do.
Right, and the mean size of the individuals of the panfish, if you will, increases.
Is that a normal term?
That's what they call it in fisheries, the fish that you're going to eat.
That's funny.
Fish that they're going to eat. So, it's interesting. And then they don't have to worry about these tiger muskies going crazy and breeding all over and completely wiping out other species of fish in the lake because they can manage their numbers.
It's like the assassin snails of the fish-ing world.
Right. And some of us have done similar things in our tanks if we have guppies that are breeding like crazy at a pearl gourami or a betta or something like that. And
take care of...
Reduce the population such that you can have a healthy population of guppies going in the tank and not worry about them overrunning or going crazy with the bioload or stunting, things like that. So people have done that in aquaria too, and it's just interesting to see. It's on a much larger scale. I mean, these tiger muskies are, it was probably 3 feet, maybe 4 feet long. Yeah. It was huge.
Big and mean looking.
There were several of them, and I got a close-up in the video of his teeth.
Nibbling on your toes when you're swimming.
No, nibbling. You could take your fingers off.
No.
They have crazy teeth. So check that out. That was probably the highlight of it for me.
Impressive.
Yeah. So...
So that should be up by the time we release this podcast, yes?
Yes, not technically up yet, but it will be soon. So by the time you hear us, it will be. So
let's take our break now, and then we will talk about all the other things we're going to talk about.
All right.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it? And we're back. So, the next thing on our agenda, Dave, who has contributed to the show before...
Yes.
...has got his website up and running.
Yeah, so check it out. We thought we'd give him a little shout-out here. It's fish-room.com.
So it's not backslash.
Not backslash.
It's not underscore.
It's a hyphen. Fish, or I guess you could call it a dash, room.com. Check it out. He's got his tank set up there. You've seen a couple of those photos on our resources page, perhaps, but he's got more of them at his website. He's also got some articles of interest and explaining a little bit about his philosophy of fish raising, and also he does sell some fish, too. So check it out. He's got some interesting things going on. And thank you, Dave, for sending that to us.
Mm-hmm.
We like it when... you, as contributors, you send us a link, you send us a website. Personal websites like this are one of the things we like to show and showcase.
Now,
so.
Do we have a links page on the website? Are they just under resources?
We do have a couple of links on the website, but most of them we just put on the resources page.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just make a
links
page.
Maybe we should
make
a links page as well.
Yeah.
And just put all of them there as well.
And then you can link to us and we can link to you.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Okay, next thing, tell us about your Daphnia.
Okay. Now, we've done a show on Daphnia, but it's been a while. And
a long while.
We've also mentioned a few things about the small, small variety of Daphnia that I have been culturing for a while. And I would like to just bring up this idea, which I think I've done before, but the idea of not having all your eggs in one basket when you raise Daphnia. Because these original small Daphnia that I got recently... I set them up in two jars. One was sort of an afterthought. I just poured, a few tablespoons of the initial culture into this other jar, thinking, well, it's a good idea. Make sure you don't have it all in one place. And it turns out that the first culture completely crashed. But that culture throve.
The second one.
The smaller one.
Throve. That's a great past tense. Is that really... You wouldn't say thrived?
Thrived is also acceptable.
I think I like throve better, though. That's
it's actually an older form, but it
cool.
does exist. And the past participle is thriven. They have thriven.
Thriven!
What do you think? Okay.
That's a cool one.
Anyway, it's not usually used either, but it's possible. So, anyway, this second smaller sort of afterthought-y culture, throve, and I used that to seed another culture, and that was doing all right. And then I changed a few of the conditions, and it started to crash too. But in the meantime, I had put some more in a bucket, and now the bucket is thriving. So there's some, how would you say it? There's some evidence that putting all your Daphnia eggs in one basket is not a good idea, and putting them in several baskets is better. So that one's been going fine, the bucket idea, and I did something recently. When was it? It was the day before yesterday. We bought some other Daphnia from a local person who's, it's actually, he's
fish
got
supplier.
A fish supplier. He's got a shop called Tropic Isle, and he has, that he runs out of his house, he's got a large fish room separate from his house in a shed. It's probably about as big as this
he's
room, maybe bigger.
Three or four levels, like shelves up on the wall,
right.
And fish tanks all the way around the room, and then like an island of them in the middle.
Right.
So the room is kind of U-shaped with fish on the sides and in the middle.
And he's got all kinds of things. He's bringing cichlids in there. He's got coolie loaches. He's got everything. It was the only place I could find coolie loaches, really, for a long time. And I got quite a few from him for a very reasonable price. But anyway, he's also got a greenhouse outside with a whole bunch more fish and things like that. And he's got some Daphnia, which he terms Russian Reds. I've heard the term and seen the term on the internet before. These are apparently descended from, and he doesn't say that he can prove it, of course, but he was told when he got the initial culture that they came from a culture that was isolated from Daphnia found in Moscow in the zoo, the Moscow Zoo, in the
alligator enclosure.
Yeah, in the water portion of the alligator enclosure. So they had been and they've been subjected to all sorts of strange stresses in an alligator pool. I can imagine that you'd get some interesting water quality issues going on in an alligator pool, but it has apparently resulted in a high degree of hardiness, and so people have prized this particular strain. And I have to agree that I haven't had it for very long, but it seems to be a very hardy strain. Now, one thing about Daphnia is water changes. You have to be very careful with water changes with Daphnia in general. Daphnia are very sensitive to certain pollutants and toxins, and in fact are used to test purity of water.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In environmental tests,
studies,
you know, they'll take a sample of water, put Daphnia in it, and if in 24 hours Daphnia are alive, it's probably pretty safe, and if they're not, then it's an indication that, you know,
there's
it's
problem
bad
with
water. So, they're sort of the canaries in the coal mine of the cladocerin world.
That was a great sentence.
Yeah, you like that? I just came up with that just now. Okay, so
that was just beautiful alliteration and syllabation, and you should write that one down. We'll make a bumper sticker.
There you go. But these Daphnia are really tough. I put them in various places. I put them in four different containers, I think, something like that, yes. And in one of the containers that I put them in yesterday, I took a few out, like seven of them, because I didn't want to destroy them, but I was hoping, you know, I needed to watch the all eggs in one basket. So I had some dechlorinated water that had sat for a few hours, and I put these seven Daphnia in, and this morning I went and checked on them. It's been 24 hours, and they are fine. They're swimming around in this newly dechlorinated water, which is usually a no-no. Usually you have to use tank water from an established aquarium, and that's what I used in all
because
the other ones, or something similar to that.
Tap water, even if it's dechlorinated, has too many heavy metals in it.
That's the idea. That's what most people say.
And if you let the water sit, they kind of...
Well, biological processes can kind of sequester them,
mm-hmm.
like bacterial action, plants growing. An interesting thing about some plants, they actually can draw up heavy metals from the water and make them part of their biomass, where they're not going to be floating around in the water column anymore. And some of them are actually used to purify water. I think it's water hyacinth can be something incredible. I think, now don't quote me exactly, but I think it's something like 60% dry weight.
So you dry out the plant and 60% of it is heavy metals.
Something like that. I could be wrong, but it's something like that. There are certain plants that will draw so many heavy metals out of the water they can actually be used just to purify it that way, and then you draw them off, and I don't know what you do with these, you know, heavy metal plants anymore, and I don't want to feed them to your chickens or anything, but you've taken care of the water.
I don't know.
You've taken care of the water, so.
Now, how long do you usually need to let the water sit to get these processes going so that the water would be safe for Daphne?
Well, in general, you just don't use water that's been sitting around. You use water that has had fish in it for a period of time, and probably plants. So you just take, when you're changing water from your aquarium with fish in it, you use that water to fill up the Daphnia in a tank.
Okay.
And that's generally what I've done. I usually use water from Hiro's tank, from our African clawed frog's tank, because, you know, that's...
It's nice and gunky.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he makes a mess, so it's kind of gunky.
He's a big froggy.
It's probably got some infusoria going in there.
So they've got something to eat.
So that helps probably with things like that. And I don't have to worry about Hydra or things like that in his tank because I don't feed him microworms. So if just in case there are a few Hydra floating around, which I would not want to introduce.
They won't eat the Daphnia.
I can take them from his tank with some confidence. Because
well, they would eat the Daphnia, but they won't eat the Daphnia because they're not in there.
Right, because he doesn't tend to indirectly feed Hydra. So that's what I usually use, but I just did this little test to see how it's working, and they're doing fine.
So they apparently are quite hardy.
They seem to be pretty tough. Most Daphnia would not be able to stand that. So there we go. I'm testing it out, and we'll see which Daphnia work for which purposes. The little ones I really like for feeding Celestial Pearl Danios because they're the perfect size for Celestial Pearl Danios. Even the adults, the adult Daphnia are small enough so that a subadult Celestial Pearl Danio can eat them. But the bigger Daphnia are great for most of the other fish. I also gave a few to the other fish, like most of the fish in the house. I gave them a few when I bought them. I bought about 700 of them. That was how they were advertised. And so I gave each of them a little treat, put a couple dozen in each tank, of most of the tanks. And even the African dwarf frogs were able to get them. They swam down to the bottom of the African dwarf frog tank, and the frogs were able to catch them. And I thought, well, this big round thing, I don't know how they're going to handle that. But they were able to catch them and crunch them up and swallow them just fine. So
they quite enjoyed it, I think.
They seem to, yeah. Okay.
So happiness with Daphnia. Okay, the next thing we're going to talk about is an update on the Everclean aqua filter.
Yeah, I was having a few problems with the filter box leaking. I think I mentioned those on a previous show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to sort of take care of it, but it was sort of jury-rigged. And didn't really like how that was working all that well. And to be fair, Joe from Everclean Aqua gave a possibility. He said I could switch the O-ring from the side of the filter box I wasn't using to the other, but I didn't get around to doing that, and then...
Well, no, switching it to the other side of the filter box, wouldn't we have to switch it to the other side of the tank?
No, actually. You just take the O-ring off of the other side of the tube, because
It's got one on both sides.
It's got a connector on
both
sides.
You can just take it and put it on the other side.
And I have the other one closed off so water doesn't go out of it, but I could have taken that over. But I was just looking at it, and I thought, Now, this is a cool thing about the Everclean Aqua Filter, is that it's... In the instructions, it says you can hook up the undergravel, the power heads and the hose that go up to the filter box. You can hook that into an existing filter box of your choice. Or you could put it into a canister filter if you wanted, whatever. It's pretty flexible about what it can go into. And so I thought, why don't I put it into an existing filter box? And so I put it into the filter box of the AquaClear 60, I think is what I had on there before. Now I've still got a BioWell on the other side, which I haven't taken off, but... But this AquaClear 60 I wasn't using, so I put it there and piped it in. I had to use the hose from an old BioWheel tank. So it's got pieces of three or four different filters on there. But it works pretty well now.
So it's kind of a mutt of a filter.
It's a mutt of a filter, but it works really well now. And
it's not leaking!
The way I've got it hooked up is kind of funny, because at night, the AquaClear 60 turns on, because it's plugged into one of the power strips that has night and day ports on it. So at night it turns on, the actual AquaClear 60 turns on, and so the water volume's a little higher. And then in the daytime, the AquaClear 60 turns off, but the flow from the power head is still going in. So the power head is always going into that. The power head that's part of the AquaClear undergravel arrangement is going up into there all the time, but at night, the aquaclear 60 turns on and increases the flow. Seems to be working well. I've actually noticed since I've done that, goldfish happiness has increased, so that's a good thing.
That's good.
So, at least...
Goldfish happiness is important.
Observed goldfish happiness, as I perceive it, in my own opinion. That's not
empirical. You didn't interview the goldfish?
No, it's not empirical evidence by any means, of course, but they just look happier, and we all know what that means. You know, you see your fish happy.
They look better.
You can kind of tell.
Yeah.
Okay, not that that's really scientific or anything, but I think you all know what I mean as aquarists.
Science is limited.
Right.
Okay, we are going to tell you about our experience with the heater recall. We took our heaters in. Remember, we talked about the recall a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, I think it was Brian who sent us the link, and we also received later, we received an email from PetSmart, not an email.
A letter.
A letter in the mail, snail mail, from PetSmart urging us to do so and so on. We did, and it brought four heaters in. At first, they didn't really know. The first couple of people I talked to, they said, oh, okay, let me go talk to this person in just a second. And then they finally got the right person after a couple of people. And, you know, I don't blame them. I imagine that not as many people have done this heater recall as...
Should
have. But anyway, they got me to the aquatic specialist. And this is the interesting thing. You can't always go into a big box store and find a real aquatic specialist. You can find a quote... unquote.
Someone whose name tag says aquatic specialist.
But this guy actually knew what he was talking about. I talked to him about his own tanks a little bit, and he has several aquascaped tanks with various plants in them and so on, and we actually had a good chat about that, and he's going to actually contact me, so I give him my contact information because he wants to buy some plants eventually when he sets up his next tank. So that was kind of nice. It's good to be able to walk into a big box store and find someone who knows what they're doing. Because I'm not pointing my finger at any particular store, but just in general, the big box store phenomenon has, I think, reduced the expertise of their employees by, you know what I mean? They haven't reduced. What I can say is that the existence of big box stores has reduced the average competence of aquatic specialists in general. How about that? Does that work?
That makes
convey
sense,
my
yeah.
idea?
That's
okay.
fair.
But it's not always true. We found a good exception. And I bought Aquion heaters. The process was pretty straightforward if you're worried about how that worked. They just said, go get your heaters and bring it back, and we'll ring it all up by, you know, we'll give you store credit right there and ring you up. And so I was able actually to get four very comparable heaters, Aquion variety or brand, which I hadn't used before, but they're very similar to the Stealth in that they are of black plastic, so they fade in nicely without being very visible or apparent. They are, you know, durable because of that plastic. You don't have to worry about a fish banging into them and breaking the glass. And they have a little light that goes on, a red light showing that it's heating and a green light showing that it's reached the desired temperature, which all features which I rather like. So I was happy with that. And I was also able to get, I picked up a fluorescent light bulb replacement and a thermometer, and I think I paid, ended up paying $5. They even reduced the prices of one of the heaters because it cost a little more than the original heater I bought, and so they reduced
nice.
The price of it slightly so it would fit. And I just had to pay $5 out of pocket, but I was buying a light bulb and a thermometer, which would have cost me like $12.
Yeah.
So actually...
So you got a good deal.
I got a really good deal. It was nice.
So if you haven't gone in and switched your heaters, the ones that have been recalled, then go do that so you don't get zapped by them.
Right. We recommend highly that you do so. I think we took longer than we probably should have.
Well,
there weren't any mishaps.
It was a pretty crazy month.
Yes, it was. But it worked out, and we're happy that we did it. Now, last thing.
Oh, tell us about the little blurb of mangroves.
Yes, in Aquarium Fish International. Now, this isn't one of my articles. I didn't write this. But in Aquarium Fish International, there's a little spot on mangroves in aquaria. And I've always been fascinated with that idea since I read an article about them years ago. And in Hawaii, in fact, I thought about collecting some, but I wasn't sure what the laws were, and I never bothered to find out. But we would find mangrove propagules is the official name. They're usually just called mangrove pods. But they're not technically a seed, I guess, but they're a vegetative form of reproduction where they drop these pods, and then the pods will sprout roots and leaves, much in the manner of a seed, but they'll float for miles
so
in the ocean.
So why are they not a seed?
I'm not sure. I just remember reading that they're not technically a seed, so I'm not sure how that works, but I could be wrong about that. At any rate, they'll float for miles in the ocean, and then they'll finally start sprouting. They'll even sprout while they're floating in the ocean.
Wow, they'll sprout in the salt water.
Yes, the interesting thing about mangroves is that they can live in completely fresh water, in any degree of brackish water, up to full-strength seawater.
Wow.
Which is amazing, I think.
Yeah.
They have various methods of dealing with that. Some of them excrete salt on their leaves. Some of them excrete it through their roots. There are different ways of doing it. But it's a fascinating thing that this plant is so adaptable. And I used to love to see the mangroves growing in Hawaii. You know, just offshore, there would be big stands of them. And seeing their prop roots sticking out is just an interesting experience. So I always wanted to grow one, but I haven't done it yet. But anyway, this article kind of gave me the spark again and had a really interesting suggestion. They said to get the plants to grow in the aquarium at the right height and have them stay in one place, use the cradle from a heater. You know, it has the suction cups and the little cradle that the heater goes in on the side. If you have an extra one of those, you can just put the mangrove pod right in there and then use zip ties or cable ties to attach it. And then it will just stay there, and you can move it up and down as you want to.
With the suction cups.
Right. And that way, you can actually move it to get the prop roots to grow, because the article mentioned that if the roots go, you keep having the roots go down by moving the plant, mm-hmm. it will eventually develop those prop roots, which are, you know, part of the fascination and appeal, aesthetic appeal of the plant. So, check out that article if you subscribe to AFI, or if you want
to
pick up.
And if we get around to trying that suggestion, we will keep you updated.
Yeah, this is the August issue, I think it was.
Yeah. So if you have a subscription, you have it already, and if not, you have to wait till August and it comes out in the stores.
Yeah, something like that. So check it out, and if any of you have any experiences with mangroves that you'd like to recount, let us know. I'm fascinated by the idea, as I mentioned, but maybe some of you have more experience than I do with that, and would be happy to share it. In the meantime,
see you next week.
Have a
Thank
great
you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com.
For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.